Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we've got something pretty intense on the table, a 1995 paper from the Annals of Probability.
Yeah, this one's definitely a deep dive in the truest sense.
The title is Approximation and Support Theorem in Holder Norm for Parabolic Stochastic Partial Differential Equations. So SPDEs.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal here isn't, you know, to replicate a PhD course. It's more about translating. Taking these really complex equations, these norms, these abstract mathematical spaces.
And pulling out the core ideas.
Exactly. Trying to get a feel for how randomness works within diffusion processes and maybe how mathematicians manage to pin it down.
That's a great way to put it because you have these physical processes like heat flow, which are usually smooth, predictable.
Right.
But then you inject true randomness, think microscopic jitters, unpredictable fluctuations at every single point in space and time. That's where SPDEs come in.
And the challenge is understanding the solution when it's mixing that smooth diffusion with, well, complete randomness, what they call space-time white noise.
Precisely. That mix is the core difficulty.
Okay, so let's try to unpack this starting point. The paper gives this formal equation, point one, frac partial 2 plus GEBX RC plus FUR.
Right.
Visually, what's going on here? The 2 os is what we're solving for, like temperature or something?
Could be temperature across a rod, yeah, or population density, something that varies in space and time.
And the frac partial 92 apart, that's the diffusion bit, the smooth spreading out.
That's your standard heat equation component, yes, predictable physics.
But then there's the du x. You call that the space-time white noise.
Yes, and that's the tricky part. It's not just random noise evolving in time. It's random at every point in space, independently, at every moment in time. It's intensely chaotic.
Simultaneously everywhere. Wow.
Yeah, it introduces a huge amount of randomness across the whole system at once.
And they add constraints too, right? Neumann boundary conditions,
right.
Variables at the end, 6 orders Ahlers, and 6 orders 1.
Mm-hmm. That means no flow, no flux across the boundaries. Whatever diffuses stays inside that interval 0, 1.
Okay. So that's the setup.
Good.
But you mentioned this is a formal equation. Why formal?
Well, because that noise term, or TSS, is mathematically very rough. It's not a function in the usual sense. You can't just integrate it using standard calculus.
Ah, okay.
So to make it rigorous, they have to use a different formulation, equation, point 3 in the paper. It involves what's called the Itô stochastic integral.
Itô integral.
Right.
That comes up a lot with randomness.
It does. And here it involves integrating against something called the heat kernel, ETASSY, which is the fundamental solution of the basic heat equation.
So Itô is the tool for this kind of rough noise.
Mm.
But there's a catch, isn't there? Something about another type of integral.
Stratonovich.
Exactly. Often, for a slightly smoother noise, you can use the Stratonovich integral, which behaves more like ordinary calculus. It's often preferred for modeling physical systems sometimes.
But not here. Not here. The authors point out something critical. The Stratonovich integral does not make sense for this equation. It breaks down.
Why? They mentioned something called an infinite trace. That sounds bad.
It is, mathematically speaking. It's a really deep issue that arises because the solution isn't just a number changing over time. It's a whole function changing over time. It lives in an infinite dimensional space, TL$2.
Because it depends on the spatial variable, $6.
Precisely. And when you try to calculate the correction term that normally distinguishes Itô from Stratonovich, which involves the variance of the noise that calculation blows up.
Blows up how?
Because you're essentially trying to sum up contributions from infinitely many spatial points, all hit by independent noise simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
In finite dimensions, this trace calculation works out fine. But here, in this infinite dimensional setting, boom, infinite trace, the math breaks.
So the sheer spatial complexity, the fact that noise hits everywhere at once in an infinite dimensional function space, prevents the use of the nicer Stratonovich integral. We're stuck with Itô.
We are. It forces us to use the Itô framework with all its specific rules. And that leads us to the next question. If we do find a solution, the x at x, what kind of object is it? Where does it live?
The paper says it's a random element of math CRC alpha, the space of Holder continuous functions. Okay, Holder continuous sounds technical. What does it mean for the solution, practically speaking?
It means it has a certain quantifiable level of roughness, or maybe smoothness is better. It's better than just continuous, but typically not differentiable. Holder continuity measures exactly how much the function can wiggle or change over small intervals.
So it's rough, but not infinitely rough. There's some control.
Exactly. There's a specific measure of its regularity. The paper gives the orders. Alpha 1 epsilon in time and beta eschews 2 epsilon in space, where epsilon is just some tiny positive number.
So slightly less than 1 in time, slightly less than 2 in space.
Right. And there's a typical relationship. If your starting function, $2, has a certain holder continuity, say alpha, the solution $ tends to be alpha 2 holder in time and alpha holder in space. Time smoothness is half the space smoothness. That's characteristic of these heat-like parabolic equations.
Okay, so we know the solution is this random holder continuous function. What's the main goal of the paper then? Just finding it?
Not just finding a solution, but characterizing the entire space of possible solutions. They want to find the support of the law of two.
Support of the law.
Yeah.
Okay, what does that mean in like plain English?
Imagine running this random process millions of times. You'll get millions of different solution paths, right? Each path is a function in that holder space. The support is basically the set of all possible functions you could ever get with a non-zero probability. It's like drawing the boundary around all possible outcomes.
Okay. So defining the exact territory that this random solution can explore.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And to define that territory, they introduce a comparison set, a set of deterministic non-random solutions. They call it a JAC.
Defined by a similar equation, point four, but without the random noise term.
Kind of. It replaces the noise term Watteau-Tiechter with a deterministic driving function, dollars.
And this function, dollars, it's not just any function, is it? It has to be special.
Very special. It has to belong to the Cameron-Martin space, denoted Math's Ratio. This is a classic space in the study of Brownian motion.
Cameron-Martin space. What kind of functions live there?
They are very smooth, very well-behaved functions. Specifically, functions dollars that are absolutely continuous and whose time derivative has finite energy, its square is integrable over the whole space-time domain. Think of them as the allowable directions you can shift a Wiener process without leaving the realm of possibility entirely.
Okay, so we have this extremely random, chaotic solution, $20 driven by white noise on one side. And on the other, we have this set dollars of very predictable deterministic solutions driven by these incredibly smooth Cameron-Martin functions of dollars. What's the connection?
This is the punchline, theorem 2.1. It says the support of the random solution, the boundary of all its possible paths, is exactly the closure of this set of deterministic solutions when measured in the holder topology.
Wait, really? So all the possible outcomes of the random equation are essentially traced out by the outcomes of the deterministic equation just by feeding it all possible smooth inputs from this Cameron-Martin space.
That's the core result. It's quite profound. Even though the system has this infinite trace problem making standard tools fail, the set of all possible trajectories it can take is perfectly described by solutions driven by these exceptionally regular functions.
That feels counterintuitive.
Huh.
The chaos is bounded by extreme order.
In a sense, yes. It tells you that the randomness explores possibilities, but the shape of that possibility space is dictated by the underlying deterministic structure pushed in these very specific smooth directions defined by Math's CSA. For people doing simulations, it's huge. It tells them what kind of functions define the boundaries of the random behavior.
Okay, that's a major result. How do they even prove that? It sounds incredibly difficult.
It was. The proof is really involved. It required combining two pretty advanced techniques. First, they had to cleverly approximate the white noise dollars. Second, they used something related to Gersonov's theorem, a way to relate probability measures under certain transformations.
Let's talk about that approximation part first. How do you approximate something as wild as space-time white noise, especially given the issues we discussed?
Right, that's section one of the paper. They build an approximation $1 using interpolation. But the way they set up the grid for interpolation is unusual.
How so?
They use a mesh size of $1 in space, which seems standard enough. But in time, they use Eidon, where some number greater than 1.
It gets small way faster than Eidon, like exponentially faster.
Mm.
Why such a skewed grid? Why make time increments tiny compared to space increments?
They stated explicitly, this non-uniform meshing is needed to handle the lack of orthogonality of the stochastic integrals in the space direction.
Ah, lack of orthogonality.
Mm.
Connecting back to the spatial complexity again, the infinite trace thing.
Exactly. Because the noise hits everywhere spatially, the integrals don't have the nice independence properties you might expect. Standard square grids don't work well. By making the time steps incredibly fine, they kind of force the approximation to behave properly, compensating for the spatial difficulties. It's like overpowering the spatial correlation with temporal resolution.
Wow, that's quite a workaround. Engineering the grid itself to solve a fundamental mathematical problem.
Yeah, but there was another twist. When they plugged this approximation under dollars into the equation to get an approximate solution in Nepal, they found they had to add an extra term, a corrective drift term.
Another correction, why?
Because smoothing out the noise with dollars, even with a special grid, inadvertently reintroduced something like the Stratonovich integral behavior. The approximation wasn't quite Itô anymore.
I see. So the approximation itself created an artifact.
Precisely. And that correction term is there specifically to cancel out that artifact. They call it the explosive correction between the Itô and the Stratonovich formulation. They had to identify the error introduced by smoothing and then actively subtract it back out to make sure $1 would converge to the true Itô solution to left.
So the approximation process itself had to explicitly account for that fundamental Itô versus Stratonovich difficulty. That's intricate.
Extremely intricate. And the main technical achievement, theorem 1.13, was proving that this whole elaborate setup, the weird grid, the correction term, actually works. That the approximate solution $6, they use $6 for the solution process, really does converge to the true solution $6 in the right way, specifically in the Illetaler sense using the Holder norm.
Okay, so proving the approximation converges correctly was key to then proving the main support theorem.
Absolutely. The approximation let them bridge the gap between the random world and the deterministic world defined by the Cameron-Martin space.
Right, so let's wrap this up. We dove into a really challenging SBDE, saw how the infinite trace problem from space-time white noise breaks standard tools like the Stratonovich integral,
forcing the use of Itô calculus.
And the major result was this support theorem. The seemingly chaotic space of all possible random solutions in the Holder norm is perfectly outlined by the set of deterministic solutions driven by these ultra-smooth Cameron-Martin functions.
A beautiful link between randomness and order.
Achieved through some really clever custom-built approximation techniques that non-uniform grid in the Itô correction term needed to handle the spatial complexity.
Exactly. It was a major piece of work in understanding these infinite dimensional systems.
Now, for a final thought to leave our listeners with, what's something intriguing that builds on this?
Well, here's something interesting the authors mention almost as an aside. Their whole main analysis uses those Newman boundary conditions, no flux at the boundaries.
Right, where the derivative is zero.
But they state that all their results, including the main support theorem, remain valid if you instead use Dirichlet boundary conditions.
Dirichlet. That's where you fix the value of the solution itself to zero at the boundaries, right? Like holding the ends of the rod at a fixed zero temperature.
Precisely. So whether you let the stuff diffuse freely within boundaries, Neumann, or you clamp the boundaries at zero, Dirichlet, the fundamental result that the random solutions fill the space traced out by the Cameron-Martin-driven deterministic ones still holds true.
Huh. So the relationship between the random support and the Cameron-Martin space is robust. It doesn't depend critically on those specific boundary constraints.
It seems to be a deeper property of the parabolic equation structure itself, interacting with the space-time noise. The physical setup at the edges changes, but the underlying mathematical characterization of the solution space remains the same. It shows how fundamental that connection really is.